Hello everyone, I'm Jan Chosen-Bays and I'd like to welcome you to the first class in an online course through Shambhala Publications about mindful eating. Many people have read the book that I wrote called Mindful Eating and then taken a workshop or a class on mindful eating, and they tell me it's a completely different experience to read about mindful eating compared to experiencing mindful eating. When we experience something, we're learning about it from the inside out. When we read about something, we're learning about it from the outside. Or when we do dieting or we do calorie counts, we're learning about something from the outside. But it's those experiences that come from the inside that have the ability to truly transform us and help us grow. I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself in case you didn't see the trailer for this course. I'm a medical doctor, actually a pediatrician, and I trained at UC San Diego. And I'm also a Zen teacher, and I trained under Maizumi Roshi at the Zen Center in Los Angeles. I received authorization to teach Zen in 1983, and I've been a pediatrician since 1972. As a pediatrician, I've become concerned about the current epidemic of obesity among children. This is having far-reaching effects on our children's health. In fact, it's predicted that for children born in the year 2000, about 30% of boys and 40% of girls will end up with type 2 diabetes and all of the side effects of diabetes. For Latina girls and Native American girls, it may be as high as 50% will end up with diabetes. There are also some liver complications, some heart complications, kidney complications, and eye complications that can go along with diabetes long term. So as a result, there are also predictions that children born in the year 2000 may live shorter lives than their parents. This is something that we all have to be concerned about. As a doctor, and also as a person who eats, I'm aware that it's not easy to change eating patterns. We often advise people how to eat, and you know, most people have read about how they should eat, or their dietitian or doctor gives them sheets about what they should eat, but it's not as easy as reading a sheet of paper and then changing your eating patterns. Somehow in this country, and ironically, in a country where most people can eat food 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, all kinds of food, ethnic food, home-cooked food, food from fast food outlets. We really have food available all the time. And although there are people in our country who are food challenged and lack food, most of us have enough to eat all the time. And when we say, oh, I'm famished or I'm starving, that's not really true compared to the situation in other parts of the world. So looking at this epidemic of being out of balance with eating or out of harmony with our natural way of eating, I decided to look at what solutions have we tried in the past. In this country, in general, when we have a problem, we have three ways of working with it. The first way is to attack it. It becomes the enemy and we attack it. The second way is to incarcerate it. Something we don't like, we put someplace where we can't see it. Like take forbidden food and then put it in the closet and don't eat it. And the third way is to apply the miracle of science and technology to the problem. So I'll give you examples. One of the first ways that we've worked historically with being out of balance with food is dieting. So with dieting, we take certain foods and we incarcerate them. We say, these foods are not to be eaten. And I've lived long enough as a physician to have seen many diets come and go. In fact, if you want to make money fast, especially if you're telegenic and especially if you're in the health-related fields or you're a movie star, then you should write a diet book because it will sell like crazy for a while until people realize that the diet doesn't work long term, and then you need to write another diet book. So I've seen diets that were the all protein diet and the no protein diet, the all carbohydrate diet, the no carbohydrate diet, the all-citrus diet, the no-citrus diet. In fact, there's a diet fad in Japan in the last few years called the banana diet, and they've sold out of bananas in many stores in Japan. And that diet is based on eating 3 bananas before you eat breakfast, 3 bananas before you eat lunch, and 3 bananas before you eat dinner. So you can imagine it works by just filling you up. A meta-analysis of dieting shows that dieting doesn't work long-term. So many people can lose about 8 to 11 pounds on any diet, and then within 2 years they've gained that weight back and maybe more. So the research shows that dieting is not the solution to our disharmony with food and with eating. And it's not a recommended solution for children. We don't want young children to start dieting. And I've become very alarmed because I see young children as young as 8 or 10 telling me, oh, I'm too fat, I need to go on a diet, when they're completely normal size. And the research also shows that the earlier that girls in particular start dieting, like in their teen years, and the more severely they go into dieting, the higher the risk of a later eating disorder. So we don't want to apply dieting to this problem, and especially with children. Then we tried attacking food. So this is the attitude that food is the problem. So we attacked food with technology. We stripped out some of the things that we thought were bad, like fat, and replaced it with artificial fat. We stripped out sugar and replaced it with artificial sweeteners. And we've taken away the salt and replaced that with artificial salts. We've stripped out the fiber until we learned that fiber was healthy. And then we've replaced it with something which isn't the bran fiber, which is natural to cereal grains, but often is cellulose. So sometimes when you read a package and it says, with added fiber, make sure you know where that fiber comes from. It may be ground up trees. So attacking food and replacing real food with artificial food, or as Michael Pollan likes to call it, food-like substances, is not the answer either. Next, we attacked our fat cells. We decided that our body's fat cells were the problem. And, you know, they're very uncooperative, those fat cells. For the 200,000 years of our evolution, they have been storing extra calories, extra energy for us. And this was absolutely necessary in the past because human beings often died of famine. And food supplies were very irregular. So if your crops failed in the fall, you might have nothing to eat during the winter. And famine was a leading cause of death among human beings. So we have a very primitive cellular memory about famine. And we try to take in extra calories to protect against unnecessary death. But now, of course, food is available all the time to us. And when we take in the extra calories, they aren't burnt off in lean times. And we end up keeping those extra calories in our fat cells. So we've applied technology to our fat cells, and that technology is called liposuction. Now, I always say that there are certain days when I look in the mirror and think, I would be grateful for some liposuction. And I'm very grateful that clothing hides those areas of my body. But one of the problems with liposuction is that if you take the fat cells off of parts of your body where you don't want them, like your belly or your thighs, and if you keep consuming extra calories, then the fat cells in other parts of your body will just inflate. So you end up with fat pads behind your elbows, around your ankles, behind your knees, and so on. So liposuction doesn't turn out to be a long-term answer. Lately, what we have done is attack our digestive system. Can you imagine the audacity of our digestive system? Whatever we put in, it tries to break down and absorb and store for us. So we've decided that our digestive system is misguided and that we must rearrange the anatomy of our digestive system so that it can't absorb our food. And that rearrangement is called bariatric surgery. Now, there are several types of bariatric surgery. Usually it involves making a smaller stomach, either by stapling or cutting off part of the stomach. And then there's another form called a bypass surgery, where we bypass the part of the small intestine that absorbs the food and reintroduce the food down further in the small intestine. Now, some unfortunate consequences of bariatric surgery are that because you're not absorbing the food, you're not absorbing fat soluble vitamins like vitamin A and vitamin D. So you have to take fairly heavy supplements. Also, you can only eat small amounts of certain foods. And if you eat more than you should in terms of quantity, in general, people can eat with a smaller stomach or bypass surgery about a half a cup to a cup of well-processed food at a time. They have to be careful about eating sugar or fat. And if you overeat in quantity or eat the wrong kinds of food, you get sick, quite sick. So what bariatric surgery actually is enforced mindful eating. With mindful eating, we can become aware of what is the appropriate amount or the appropriate type of food for us to eat by paying attention to our digestive system, by paying attention to our cells, and then following their wisdom about what to eat and how to eat, and bring ourselves back in harmony with body, heart, and mind, in harmony with our eating and our food choices. Now, I'm not claiming that bariatric surgery is all wrong for every person. I know people who've benefited tremendously from it. When they lose weight, often they can begin to exercise. They have a lot more energy, and when they can exercise, they lose more weight. Also, they can often go off of their diabetes medication within a few days after having surgery. We don't exactly know how that happens. And sometimes their blood pressure is lowered too, so a lot of their health risks are decreased after bariatric surgery. But there are side effects from bariatric surgery. For one thing, it costs about $30,000, so it's not available to many people. Another side effect is what's called transfer addiction. So if people aren't well prepared psychologically and screened psychologically for bariatric surgery, they can end up with an increased rate, in some studies as high as 25% of people following bariatric surgery end up with an addiction to drugs or alcohol, or to gambling, or to sex. Because they lose body weight, their hormones shift, and they explore their sexuality in a rather uncontrolled way. The other issue with bariatric surgery, it is really not appropriate for children, for growing children, because we do not know the long-term side effects of rearranging our digestive system, this digestive system that evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to keep us healthy. So bariatric surgery is not a long-term solution for this issue. So in summary, food is not the problem. Food-like substances might be the problem, but true food is not the problem. Fat cells are not the problem. They're just trying to do their job in keeping us healthy for lean times, which actually almost never come. And our digestive system is not the problem. It's also trying to keep us healthy by absorbing food and giving us energy for our daily life. So at this point, I looked at the other half of my life. I've had these two parallel careers, a career as a physician and a career as a Zen teacher. And I thought perhaps there's a solution in our Zen practice, in the Zen half of my life. I wanted a solution that was inexpensive, so accessible to more people, something that could be learned by parents and passed on to children, or had an immunizing effect. If we taught it to children, it would immunize them against problems with eating for the rest of their life. Something that had positive side effects and would transfer positively to the rest of your life outside of your eating life. And something that would help get us in touch with our spiritual foundation, our religious foundation. Our life doesn't go well if we don't have a spiritual or religious foundation for our life. This is absolutely essential and probably the most nourishing thing we can do. So in looking at my Zen practice, I realized that for 2,500 years, we have had a practice of mindful eating. I first learned it at the first retreat that I went to as a Zen student, and I was absolutely delighted with it. And when I became a teacher, I began teaching it to my students. Here at the monastery, we eat in a ceremonial way with a set of bowls called Oryoki bowls. Oryoki means just enough, and it means that by paying attention to our body's wisdom, to the eight hungers, which you'll learn about in the next class, we can develop an awareness of what we should eat, how much we should eat, and when we should eat it. That comes from within us. It's not some rules that people enforce from the outside. So I'd like to share with you in this course the principles of mindful eating. Out of all of the research that I did on eating, I wrote a book called Mindful Eating. The full title is Mindful Eating, A Guide to Rediscovering a Healthy and Joyful Relationship with Food. And one of the most important words in the title, besides joyful, is rediscovering. Because this is a wisdom that you had when you were a child and that's been lost over the years. And mindful eating will help you rediscover that innate wisdom. One of the issues that people run into when they've become out of balance with eating is a voice inside that we call the inner critic. And the inner critic can become a driving force behind a situation called yo-yoing, where people diet and then crash and then overeat and then get back on a strict diet and then crash and then overeat. And that situation is directly related to the inner critic, who feels that if we make one small mistake, it's all over and we might as well eat the whole cake. So we abbreviate the inner critic, that inner critical voice, as IC. But we want to change that with mindful eating to inner curiosity. We want to explore what's going on when we eat, what's going on in our mind and our heart and our body with curiosity. Because through curiosity, we can make very interesting discoveries. And out of those discoveries, we can change the way we eat in a natural way. What is mindful eating? Mindfulness is deliberately bringing attention to our external environment and to our internal environment while we're eating. And this last part is really important, without criticism or judgment. So mindful eating involves deliberately, that means purposefully, bringing our full attention to our external environment. So that might include looking at the food in our bowls and appreciating it as a piece of art, appreciating the colors, the shapes, and the textures before we begin to eat. It also involves smelling the food, appreciating the aromas before we begin to eat, like people might sniff a fine wine for its aroma. We bring deliberate attention to the internal environment. So once the food is in our mouth, we focus our full attention on the mouth, on the textures, on the flavors, even the temperatures of the food, fully absorbed and enjoying what we're eating. It sounds radical, but it's really fun to do. So we bring full attention to the external environment and the internal environment while we're eating. And the internal environment includes what our mind is thinking about, how our heart feels about the food, how our mouth experiences the food, and then how the food feels as it goes into our digestive system and then ultimately out to our cells. And I'm going to reiterate the last part because it's very important, without criticism or judgment. So this is where we change the inner critic to inner curiosity. People sometimes ask, when did mindful eating begin? The answer is, it's beginningless, because you yourself once were a mindful eater. All children are mindful eaters. There's an old experiment in which they put children in high chairs with trays in front of them, and put a variety of foods on the trays. And within a week's time, the children, these are small children, toddlers, would eat a balanced diet. So they would eat the right nutritional balance and they would eat the appropriate number of calories. It's as if they were listening to an inner nutritionist or dietitian. So that's an inner wisdom that we've always had. However, it took a week for the children to eat a balanced diet. So the first day, they might eat only mashed potatoes. So of course, what's the parent's reaction when they see that the children haven't eaten the protein or the vegetables, or the fruits in a balanced diet? The parents get upset. So children are mindful eaters until parents interfere. And of course, being a parent and a grandparent, I know that instinct. Your child eats only mashed potatoes and you think, oh no, they haven't had any protein today. So you take a fork and you jab it in that piece of chicken or that piece of tofu and you try to shovel it in their mouth. So right away, at that point, we're interfering with their internal wisdom about what to eat. So the first day they eat mashed potatoes, but if you let it go on for a week, the next day they eat peas. The day after that, they might eat applesauce. And the day after that, Cheerios. So in the course of a week, they will eat very appropriately if we don't interfere. Mindful eating is about rediscovering, as I said, the most important word in the title of the book, rediscovering that innate ability that you had when you were young to eat in a way that was balanced and harmonious. That is your natural birthright as a human being, and mindful eating can restore it to you. Mindful eating is becoming known all around the world. The Mindful Eating book has been translated into 7 languages so far. I teach a course for professionals called Mindful Eating Conscious Living to help train professionals so that they can pass mindful eating on to their clients or their patients. And the professionals who come to that training say, this is the missing piece. We can teach people all about calorie counts and food pyramids, but mindful eating is what we really need to fill in the hole in what we're teaching our parents, our patients, and our clients. So I invite you to join me in the joyful and healthy practice of mindful eating. This course will give you the tools to help you restore yourself to a balanced and harmonious way of eating. Mindful eating is really fun. And I look forward to you joining me in the next class.